Welcome back to the Deep Dive. We're here again to really cut through the noise and get you the insights you need. Today, we're tackling something fundamental, something maybe a lot of us just, well, take for granted in management. It's this idea that performance problems are mostly down to the individual, you know, something you react to, maybe discipline eventually. I think, like, many of us have been there. You see a team member struggling, maybe service is slow, or they're late, or just not enthusiastic. You hope it gets better, or maybe have a quiet word, but often it ends up escalating, right? Formal warnings, stress, this reactive approach, it's not just, well, inefficient. It's genuinely stressful. And honestly, it can kill morale, not just for them, but for everyone. But what if there's another way? What if true performance management isn't about fixing problems after they happen? What if it's about proactively building people up? A continuous dynamic process, developing capabilities, aligning goals. It's that shift, isn't it? From just overseeing tasks to truly leading people, creating a culture where people grow. I read this great metaphor.
Forgetting to manage performance is like forgetting to restock your cellar. Eventually, you just run dry. You got nothing left. So our mission today is to give you a practical, powerful framework, something to manage your team effectively, help everyone reach their potential. We're drawing insights from a guide on post staff, actually, but these ideas, they apply everywhere, any team, any industry wanting to unlock potential.
That's such a critical point because so many leaders get stuck in what I sometimes call performance debt. They're constantly paying the price for issues that weren't addressed earlier. It's just damage control, really. What we want to explore today is shifting to performance equity. Think of it like building value. It's about investing proactively in development, knowing that every bit of effort yields returns, loyalty, resilience, even innovation. This isn't just, you know, a nice to have. It's absolutely fundamental for sustained success. It's the superpower of great teams.
Performance equity, I like that. So let's really dive into the core problem then. This no news is good news trap. It's that default mode, isn't it? If things seem quiet, no major complaints, you just assume everything's ticking along fine. It feels like trust, maybe empowerment. But often, it's actually creating uncertainty, maybe even neglect. And the dangerous thing is, problems don't just vanish in that quiet. They fester. They grow underground until, bam, they explode.
Yeah, it's deeper than just, you know, not noticing things. It taps into that basic human need for clarity, for recognition, for purpose at work. When a manager is too hands-off, it creates a vacuum, and that vacuum gets filled, all right? But with confusion, maybe disengagement, if people don't know what good actually looks like in their role, how can they possibly aim for it? And if they knock it out of the park, but nobody seems to notice, well, how long before they just stop trying so hard? It chips away at motivation.
Exactly. And when you don't have that structured, intentional process, several big problems tend to pop up, and they feed off each other, making things worse. First off, and this is huge, staff lack direction. Simple as that. Imagine trying to get somewhere without a map or even knowing the destination. That's what it's like for them. They don't have a clear grasp of what they're accountable for or what good really means in their specific job. What are the standards? How is success measured? Without that clarity, you get inconsistency. People guess, they make assumptions, and that leads to frustration for them because they want to do well and for you trying to manage it all.
Mm-hmm. And it's not just about tasks. It stifles initiative too, doesn't it? Even your best people might hold back if the boundaries aren't clear. They don't want to overstep. So yeah, consistency becomes impossible. Effort feels random. It's just inefficient, leads to mistakes. And that feeling of, why even bother trying?
And it hits your good performers too. This is where that no news trap really bites. When good work goes unnoticed, your stars, the ones really driving things forward, they start feeling invisible, unappreciated. The source we looked at puts it really well. Every person wants to feel appreciated. If they don't get that, they'll look for it elsewhere. Simple as that. Think about it like, I don't know, a great musician playing to an empty room every night. Sooner or later, they're going to find somewhere with an audience, right?
It's fundamental psychology, isn't it? Recognition validates effort. It tells people, yes, what you do matters. It builds that sense of value. When that's missing, even the most dedicated people start to question things. That inner drive fades, and they will start looking for places where their contributions are seen, celebrated, and linked to their own growth. This isn't soft stuff. It's about keeping your best talent.
Then inevitably, poor performance festers. Those little things, right?
Yeah.
A few minutes late, a customer interaction that wasn't quite right, a missed detail, they get ignored, swept under the rug, because there's no system to just, you know, gently address them early on. You think, oh, it's not a big deal, or they'll figure it out. But they also don't, not on their own. By the time it becomes a big deal, it's often past the point of simple coaching. You're suddenly in difficult disciplinary territory, or someone resigns, and you think, gosh, we could have avoided this.
And that ripple effect. It's powerful. When small issues are ignored, it sends a message to everyone, not just the person involved. Others see it. They see standards aren't really upheld consistently, and it subtly lowers the bar for the whole team. Why should they push hard if okay is clearly good enough for someone else? It makes it so much harder to reset expectations later, like a tiny crack widening over time.
And the last piece. Development just stalls. Performance doesn't magically improve. People need to learn, grow, refine skills. But a hands-off approach, it offers zero path for that. No investment in training, no mentoring, nothing structured. And that lack of growth opportunity is a huge driver of turnover, especially, as our source highlights, in industries like hospitality. Think about the direct cost to you, constantly hiring, onboarding, training, only to maybe lose them and start all over again. It's exhausting and incredibly expensive.
Beyond the obvious costs, yeah. You lose that built-up knowledge. Team cohesion gets disrupted. Everyone else feels the strain. It creates this constant churn where the team never really gels or builds deep expertise. It just undermines the whole foundation, creating a negative feedback loop that's really tough to break. It starves the business of stability and talent.
So boil it down, this no news is good news trap. It leads straight to low morale, inconsistent service,
yeah. And
that draining, costly cycle of hire, train, lose, repeat. It's like being stuck on a treadmill going nowhere fast.
Exactly. It affects everything. By not providing direction, not acknowledging effort, not addressing issues early, not investing in growth, you're basically creating an environment where mediocrity feels okay. Excellence isn't rewarded, and people feel, frankly, disposable. It breaks down trust, kills innovation, and limits any real long-term potential. It turns a vibrant team into a stagnant pond.
Okay. That paints a stark picture. So if no news is good news is the trap, how do we get out? The solution, thankfully, is actually quite clear. It's elegant, powerful. The performance management cycle. And this isn't, you know, a once-a-year checklist thing. No, it's holistic, it's continuous, it brings everything together. It's designed for ongoing improvement, adaptation. And a really useful model, building on Ken Blanchard's work, breaks it into three simple stages: plan, coach, and review. Easy to remember.
And that cyclical nature is key, isn't it? Compared to just a linear process. Linear implies a start and an end, task done. But performance isn't like that. It's dynamic. It evolves. A cycle reinforces that learning is ongoing, that feedback isn't final judgment, but fuel for the next step. It builds in that flexibility, that need to adapt, which makes teams way more resilient, more capable of improving through change.
Totally. And looking at the stages, it just makes sense. First, performance planning. This is the foundation. Everything starts here. It's about agreeing on goals, objectives with your team members, collaboratively. Defining what you expect, the standards they need to meet, how their role fits in, setting that North Star so everyone's pulling in the same direction.
Then, stage two, performance coaching. This is the heartbeat, really, where you spend most of your time as a leader. It's the day-to-day stuff. Ongoing guidance, support, resources, checking in regularly, praising good work when it happens, gently redirecting when needed, often right in the moment. This is where relationships build, skills develop, trust grows. Not just in formal meetings, it's about being engaged.
And finally, stage three, performance review. This is the more formal sit down, discussing performance over a set period, maybe 6 months, maybe a year. Recapping progress against those plans, celebrating wins, acknowledging challenges, and crucially, setting goals for the future. But here's the magic. If the planning and coaching were done well all along, these reviews, they should have absolutely no surprises. Everyone knows where they stand. It becomes a forward-looking, positive conversation, not a dreaded judgment day.
And think bigger picture. This whole cycle aligns everything: resources, systems, people with the organization's main goals. In our pub example, it means the chef reducing waste, the bartender creating great cocktails, the cleaner keeping things spotless. Everyone sees how their work contributes to the pub's overall success. It builds that culture of accountability, shared purpose, breaks down silos. Everyone knows their part in the collective win, a much stronger unit.
Okay, let's zoom in on that first stage then, performance planning. This is so critical. You can't expect people to hit a target they can't even see, right? Planning is laying that foundation, defining success, setting the bar clearly. And it actually starts before day one with two key documents, the job description and the person specification. A good job description is precise, outlines responsibilities, tasks, accountabilities in detail. But it's more than just HR paperwork, isn't it? It's a living guide. Sets the stage for what someone will be measured against.
Exactly. A vague description causes problems later. A good one connects tasks to purpose. instead of just serve customers, maybe it's provide amazing service that builds loyalty and helps us hit our repeat business target. See the difference? It elevates the task. It becomes a reference point for those ongoing conversations about performance.
And alongside that, the person specification. That's your blueprint for the ideal hire. Lists the essential skills, knowledge, and, importantly, the behaviors needed to really thrive in that role, in your specific team culture. For you, the manager, it helps you hire right. Find someone with the foundation and the attitude. But it also helps candidates self-select. They read it and think, yeah, that's me, or maybe not. Saves everyone time and potential mismatches later. Clear expectations from the start. Okay, so you've hired someone. Now planning moves to the individual level, setting clear goals. And these aren't random. They need to cascade down from the bigger picture of the company's strategic goals, whether that's better food in a restaurant, higher customer satisfaction, more efficiency, whatever it is. This creates that direct line of sight. Everyone sees how their work connects to the overall success. It makes the work meaningful. Let's use those pub examples again. Say the pub wants to boost its food reputation. A chef's goal might be reduce food waste by 10% next quarter using the new inventory system. Specific, measurable. Or maybe achieve an average 4.5-star food rating on review sites in 6 months. Again, super clear, tangible. These aren't just vague hopes. They're smart goals. They give people concrete targets and show exactly how they contribute. No ambiguity. Loads of purpose.
It's transformative, isn't it? Taking those big, maybe abstract company goals and making them real, actionable steps for individuals. It explicitly says, here's the vision and here's your specific part in making it happen. That clarity drives focus, sure, but it also builds ownership, a sense of purpose. People feel like they're architects of success, not just cogs.
And a really useful tool here is the personal development plan, the PDP. This isn't just about fixing weaknesses, it's forward-looking.
Mm-hmm.
You sit down together, identify learning needs, career hopes, and agree on development actions. Maybe it's a training course, or shadowing someone senior, or taking on a challenging project to build new skills. The key is, it's personal, planned.
And the value is twofold. Yes, it plugs skill gaps, builds capability, but just as importantly, it shows you're invested in their career, their growth with the company. That kind of commitment builds incredible loyalty, especially in industries with high turnover like hospitality. It tells people, we see potential in you, we want you to grow here.
Mm-hmm.
That can be the difference between someone staying long-term or leaving after a few months.
Right, so planning sets the stage. Now, let's get into performance coaching. This is the absolute heart of it all, I think, where you spend most of your time. It's not about scheduled meetings. It's continuous, informal, observing, giving feedback, offering support constantly. And there's a fantastic framework to guide this, Hersey and Blanchard's Situational Leadership 2 model. The core idea is simple but profound. There's no single best leadership style. It doesn't exist. Great leaders adapt. They change their style to match the specific development level of the person they're managing, the task at hand. You meet people where they are and give them what they need, not what you think they should need.
It's the opposite of one size fits all, which frankly rarely fits anyone perfectly. Everyone's different, right?
Yeah.
Different levels of skill, different levels of confidence or motivation, changing day by day sometimes. Using the same approach for a newbie and a seasoned pro just doesn't work. You either micromanage or leave them stranded. Being flexible, being responsive, that's what unlocks potential. It prevents frustration and keeps people engaged.
So Situational Leadership 2 gives us four distinct styles matched to four development levels. Understanding these can really change how you manage. First is S1, directing. High on direction, low on support. This is for the D1, the enthusiastic beginner. Think of that new bartender, first day. Super keen, maybe a bit nervous, but basically knows nothing about this job yet. High commitment, low competence. Your job. Clear step-by-step instructions. Tell them exactly what to do, how to do it. Like, okay, here's precisely how you change the barrel, step one, step two, or to use the till, you press this, then this, then this. Clarity is everything. Build those basics.
Absolutely critical. Without that clear direction, the D1 gets overwhelmed, makes mistakes, and that initial enthusiasm, poof, it's gone. The directive style gives them structure, confidence for those first steps, minimizes errors, builds foundational skill. It's about safety and competence building first.
Okay, then they learn a bit and maybe hit a rough patch. That brings us to S2, coaching, high direction and high support. This is for the D2, the disillusioned learner. They've got some skills now, competence is growing, but maybe they've lost confidence, got flustered, made mistakes, motivation dipped. So you still provide direction, guidance on the how, but you layer on lots of support, encouragement, praise for what is working. You explain the why behind things now, not just the what. And you ask for their ideas. Maybe, hey, you handled that rush better today, but let's talk about organizing the orders. What do you think might work better when it gets crazy? Rebuilding confidence, re-engaging them.
This S2 stage is so vital. It's where people can easily give up if they don't get that support. Mixing direction with encouragement helps them push through the frustration. It reignites that spark. It's a balance, right? Giving guidance, but also helping them find their own solutions. Fosters ownership of their learning.
Then progress continues. We get to S3, supporting. Low direction, high support. This is for the D3, the capable but cautious performer. They're skilled now, competent. They know what to do. But maybe they still hesitate to take the lead, make decisions independently without checking first. Competence is high, but confidence isn't quite there yet for full autonomy. Your role shifts. You step back on a how. You empower them. Listen to their ideas. Ask questions to help them solve problems. Support their decisions. You become more of a sounding board, a facilitator. Sarah, you've got great ideas for the new display. Talk me through your top two options. What are the pros and cons you see? You're guiding their thinking, not giving answers.
This is that leap towards independence, isn't it? Moving from doing for to doing with, eventually enabling. It builds their confidence in their own judgment, develops problem-solving muscle. You're letting them spread their wings, knowing you're there if they wobble.
And finally, the goal. S4, delegating. Low direction, low support. This is for the D4, the self-reliant achiever. Your star performer, highly skilled, highly motivated, confident, needs very little from you day to day. Your role now, trust, empowerment, delegate significant responsibility, give them autonomy to manage their own work, maybe even lead projects or mentor others. You might just say, okay, this project is yours, run with it. Let me know if you hit any major roadblocks, but I trust your judgment.
And that's the aim, right? To develop people to this point. When you can delegate confidently, you're not just freeing up your time, you're building leaders. Unleashing potential, expanding the whole team's capacity. It's a massive win-win.
So the manager's job is this constant dance, helping people move along that curve, adjusting your style, directing, coaching, supporting, delegating based on their needs in that moment, meeting them where they are, helping them grow. Let's make this really concrete. Let's follow Tom, our new bartender, and his manager, Sarah, over 9 months in that pub. See how she uses situational leadership.
Yeah, seeing it play out really highlights how crucial that adaptability is. It's about personalized management, nurturing potential stage by stage. That's what builds loyalty and capability.
Okay, month one. Tom's the D1, the enthusiastic beginner. Eager, positive, but zero pub experience. Doesn't know products, tills, procedures, low competence, high commitment. Sarah, pure directing, S1.
Yeah.
Thorough induction, clear step-by-step instructions for everything. Close supervision, showing him exactly how to pour, clean, use the till, focuses on the what's and how, building basics safely.
Mm-hmm. That close supervision provides the structure he needs right then. Prevents overwhelm, minimizes early mistakes, builds confidence in those core tasks, sets a solid foundation.
Okay, jump to month three. Tom's now at D2, the disillusioned learner. Got the basics down, but gets flustered when it's busy. Made a few mistakes, confidence dipped. Moderate competence, commitment is wavering a bit. Sarah sees this. She shifts to coaching, S2. Spends more time observing, but also praising progress. You're getting much faster on the till. Gives constructive feedback after busy shifts. Let's chat about managing multiple orders. She explains the why behind things. Asks for his input. Still directive, but heaps of support and encouragement to rebuild that confidence.
And that shift is critical. If she'd stayed purely directive or ignored the dip, he might have just checked out. The coaching validates his skills, but addresses the challenges with support. It helps him overcome that hurdle and regain momentum. It's empowering him to figure things out with guidance.
Great. Now month six. Tom's a D3, capable but cautious. He's skilled, handles most things well, high competence. But still a bit hesitant to, say, take initiative on something new. Lacks that final bit of confidence for full independence. Sarah sees the potential. Moves to supporting, S3. Gives him a project. Tom, you're great with flavors. How about you develop next week's cocktail special using local gin? Doesn't tell him what to make. She acts as the sounding board. Asks questions. What garnish are you thinking? How will you cost it out? She supports his decision-making, facilitates his creativity.
Exactly. She's encouraging him to use his competence, take ownership, build belief in his own ideas. Her role is cheerleader and guide, removing obstacles, offering advice when asked, but letting him lead. It's fostering that next level of independence.
And then month nine, success. Tom's a D4, self-reliant achiever, top performer, confident, creative, motivated, high competence, high commitment. Sarah naturally shifts to delegating, S4. gives him full ownership of the weekly specials concept, recipes, ordering, everything. Trusts him completely. Minimal oversight needed. What a journey, eh? All thanks to Sarah adapting her style to Tom's needs at each stage.
And the payoff. At Tom's first annual review, no surprises. Because Sarah coached him continuously, he knew exactly how he was doing all along. The review isn't a judgment, it's a celebration. A chance to recap his amazing progress, maybe talk about future development, maybe even mentoring newer staff. And then the cycle starts again, planning the next stage. That no surprises review, that's the gold standard. It shows trust, continuous communication, real growth.
Absolutely. Which brings us neatly to that final piece.
Yeah.
The formal performance review meeting itself. It's the official sit-down, summing up performance over the last 6 months or year. But like we saw with Tom, if the planning and coaching were solid, it's just a recap. No shocks, no awkwardness. Now, to make these reviews meaningful, you need data, right? You can't just rely on memory or feelings. You need a clear way to monitor and measure performance objectively.
Yeah, relying on gut feel leads to bias. The source material gives good examples. You can track customer feedback, satisfaction scores, that's direct insight. Observations by managers or senior staff capturing those real-time behaviors data might miss. And operational records, things like sales per employee from till reports, waste percentages, service times, objective metrics. But the key is using a mix of these. Don't just rely on one number. Get a rounded picture, quantitative and qualitative. Judging a chef only on speed ignores the taste, right? Same idea.
Good point. Balance is essential. And the review meeting itself, it absolutely has to be a two-way street. Not just you delivering a verdict. It's a conversation. Covering past performance against goals. What went well? What could be better? But crucially, looking forward. Agreeing future goals. Identifying development needs together. And by setting those future goals, what happens? You naturally restart the planning phase. The cycle begins again. Continuous improvement. Maybe think about your own reviews right now. How could you make them more collaborative? More forward-looking. What questions could spark real reflection? So wrapping this all up, what's the big takeaway? Effective performance management. Wherever you are, it's a commitment. A commitment to developing your people continuously. It's about being that adaptable, supportive leader who truly understands your main job is helping your team succeed. Nurturing their growth.
It really is a fundamental shift, isn't it? Moving away from just reacting to problems, fixing things after they break, towards being proactive. A cycle of plan, coach, review that's focused on human potential, on growth. It's not just a process, it's a leadership philosophy. Believing that a thriving individual builds a thriving organization, building that legacy of growth.
And the result, you create high-performance culture. Simple as that. Goals are clear. Everyone understands their part. Feedback is constant, constructive. People feel valued, supported, and invested. And that means lower turnover, sure. Saves money, saves headaches. But it also means a happier, more motivated, more effective team. Delivering better service, innovating more, keeping customers happy. Imagine that impact on the business, the team, even your own stress levels. So here's a final thought for you to take away. Reflecting on that situational leadership model, What style are you mostly using right now with your team members? And is it really matching their current development level? Is it helping them grow towards being self-reliant achievers? Or is it, maybe unintentionally, holding them back?
And consider this. Even small, deliberate shifts in your approach, tailored to each person, can make a huge difference. These aren't just tactics, they're investments in people. And those investments ripple outwards, boosting the whole team, building morale, and creating a place where everyone, including you, can truly flourish.